As was mentioned, every third Sunday night of the month, either Sean or I will present a lesson on what we're kind of calling Back to the Basics. We're calling it that. In the reality, it may not be basic to a lot of people. You know, Sean's lesson last month was on the subject of drinking. I think it's one that's very much needed in our society in general, but also especially among the Lord's people. We need to be having discussions about that and understand what the Bible says about such topics. So Christians be engaging in such things as that. It's not going to be long before we, as members of the Lord's body, are going to have discussions about the subject of marijuana. It's been legalized in so many states. It's something that others are arguing, well, since it's a lot safer and a lot less harmful to your health than cigarettes or alcohol, then it must be okay. And we'll be having that discussion before long, I'm sure, trying to convince Christians that such activity is sinful and wrong. It's good for us to look at these lessons because we have those among us, as we always do, and as is a very good thing, those who are very young, age-wise, and are just now experiencing and learning things of life. We also have those who are very young in the faith. But this may be the very first time you've encountered some of these topics, some of these arguments, and so we need to address them. It's also something that, from time to time in a congregation, you have those who have just turned a blind eye to the sinfulness of the world around us and decided to engage in things which are clearly sinful and wrong. The argument always goes out, though, where's the verse that says that gambling is wrong? And that's one of the things that we'll look at as we go through the lesson. But as I said, that tonight's lesson is going to be on the subject of gambling. And so, as I asked Mary Lou if she had got her lottery ticket before she came here tonight, she said, "You can't win if you don't enter." And that is the marketing logo of it. You can't win if you don't enter. Gambling is one of those subjects that has been a part of my family for a long period of time, from our earliest memories. I can remember gambling being just a normal part of my family's life. Those of you who don't know, there was several years in my life where I grew up living in the same household pretty much with my grandparents. And my parents there also, but in my grandparents, they pretty much owned a bar, and there were pool tables and things, and I can remember being very young and shooting pool for money, 8, 9, 10 years old. Gambling so much that on summer days when we got tired and ran out of things to gamble about, we would open up the windows and let flies in the house. And we'd take a fly swatter and bet a quarter at a time if when we hit that fly with a fly swatter, would it stick to the wall, stick to the fly swatter, or hit the floor? That's people who have run out of things to do. But I can remember that being a very huge part of my life and not really thinking anything about it. I can remember being in the military and when I first got in there and people would sell squares for football games. You know, you may pay a dollar or so and you get this square and it's supposed to be if this square meets this team score and that's the team score. If you're the one whose square is closest to that, you win the pot of everybody who put in money. And that being a very popular thing, and not really thinking a lot about it. Gambling is one of those things that, truthfully, as I thought about giving the lesson, it wasn't what I intended to do tonight. I was actually going to talk about the role of women in the church. But then as Sean and I were talking this week, he told me, he said, "Well, you know, there have been some who have asked about a lesson about gambling." And I began to think about it, and it wasn't one of those things where I said, "Yes, that's a great topic," until I started digging into it. There's always been those things that I have studied along this road, if you will. But this time has really hit me a lot harder, it seems like. There were a lot more things that I encountered and I came across this time as I studied that I had not considered. And I think the reason why is because as I've gotten older and I've seen a whole lot more and I've seen kind of the arguments that people make about any type of sinful activity, it's very obvious that we as Christians sometimes have a very hard time recognizing sin. More than that, we have a very hard time calling sin, sin, when we see it. We have a very apt to excuse it when it's present. And with a subject like gambling, it's no different. In our country, right now, 85% of U.S. adults have gambled. 80% in the last year. 8 out of every 10. Chances are that's going to hit somebody in this audience, if not several. 85%. There are more compulsive gamblers in this country than alcoholics. there's more than 1 million adolescents that are severely addicted to gambling. This year, 38% of Americans will visit Las Vegas. And of that 38%, 87% of them will gamble when they get there. It is very, very, very prevalent. If you've never been to a place like Las Vegas, you don't realize just how severe this can get. Many times we live in societies where these things aren't very prevalent. But we do as we drive up and down the highways and as we see on television commercials, Powerball, lottery, things like that, off-track horse betting and things like that. It's not that far to Choctaw Casino up in Oklahoma. I dare say we as Christians have probably been touched by this subject more than maybe we'd like to admit. You know, when you look in Genesis chapter 2, you have God giving a very plain directive to His creation. You can eat of every tree of the garden, but in the tree that's in the midst of the garden, this tree of the knowledge of good and evil, don't eat of it. Eve was clear. When we get to chapter 3, Eve was very clear on the command that was given. And even when Satan comes to her, she says, we are not to even touch it. She was very clear. But Satan said, you will not surely die. It's what God said, but you won't surely die. And so Eve saw that this tree was good for food, it was pleasing to the eye, it was something that was probably going to make her wise, according to what Satan had said, and so she took of its fruit. It was very simple. One command, do not eat of the tree. But that evil presented itself in a different form. Oh, it's good for food. It's pleasing to the eye. It's able to make one wise. It's not going to kill me, according to Satan. And so she took of it, and she ate. It does not matter. What I'm getting at is it does not matter how clear and direct and how just blunt a commandment is. If people want to do it, they're going to do it. I cannot tonight present for you a verse that says, thou shalt not gamble. And you know what? It would not matter even if I did. That's the truth. If you don't believe me, the Bible says very plainly, call no man on earth father. And you have religious groups all around us calling men father. The Bible says don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. And yet we have Christians who aren't here tonight. It does not matter how direct the commandment is. If a person wants to do it, they're going to do it. And they're going to find justification for it. And so as we go through the subject of gambling, I want you to ask yourself, is gambling sinful? And can you prove it? What Mike was talking about at the beginning of the service tonight. Can you prove it? And how can we go about proving it? But as I said before, and I think it's very good for us to make this point before we move on. What has really become of sin in our society? What has really become of sin even among the Lord's people? Is there really anything anymore that we call sinful? We say Christians ought not, Christians shouldn't, it's probably not a good idea, maybe they ought not. But we don't a lot of times just call sin by what it truly is, sin. We don't truly tell people you're going to lose your soul over something like that because you want to play the same game that Eve did. Don't eat of the tree, Eve. Eve said, no, don't touch the tree, Eve. Yes, but it's good for food. Oh, in that case, I'll go ahead and eat it because that makes it all right. Because God never said anything about if it's good for food, if it's pleasing to the eye, if it's able to make one wise. He just said, don't eat it. And all Satan had to do is deceive. And she partook and gave to her husband with her. When you look in Revelation chapters 2 and 3, you see all those churches that are mentioned. And when you look at all those churches, every one of them that had problems because of this. They allowed the things of the world, the attitude and dictates and the ways of the world, become a normalcy to them. They had absorbed them into their own congregations. And when that happened, God said, Jesus said, I will remove your candlestick if you do not repent. And that's what happens, brethren, to any group of God's people. When we allow the worldly things to creep in, the ways of the world, the way the world thinks, the way the world does things, if we look to the world as our standard, as we talked about a few weeks ago, we're going to be lost. We have no need of God if the world is going to be our standard for things. And so we need to be able to identify when something truly is sinful and what that sin will do to us. We need to recognize sin as being something that can destroy our way of life, because too many Christians have just put their consciences to sleep. Too many Christians have failed to view things as they should have. too many Christians have failed to identify the many forms in which sin presents itself. In 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 21 and 22, test all things, hold fast what is good, abstain from every form of evil. Evil shows itself in a lot of different forms, in a lot of different circumstances, in a lot of different ways. Now, this verse does not mean that something that just looks sinful, we should stay away from. What it does mean, if something is sinful, it is sinful. You cannot have something that looks sinful and it be righteousness. So what we're talking about when we're talking about forms of sin is sin itself. But it shows itself in a lot of different ways. Covetousness is a sin. One of the ways in which covetousness shows itself is in gambling. That's a form of sin. Hating your neighbor, hating your brother, shows itself in a lot of different forms. One form is in gambling. So why is gambling sinful? Just a preliminary? Because it is a form of these types of sins. We're not talking about something that just looks like it. We're talking about something that actually is sinful. And so let's get past the game of just trying to excuse from the very beginning. God condemns unrighteousness. And so when we go about proving or disproving any subject, we have to go about trying to prove or disprove whether or not it's righteous or not. And if it's not righteous, then it is unrighteous. If it's not unrighteous, then it would be righteous. That's your only options with those types of endeavors. We as Christians cannot compromise with sin. We cannot minimize sin. We cannot be like those who are mentioned in Romans 1 and verse 25, who exchange the truth of God for the lie and worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator. When we go about serving ourselves, when we look to ourselves and others like us as being the standard, and we worship and serve at the altar of what I want, we are putting God on the back burner. And that's sinfulness. And so anything that causes you to do that is going to be sin, no matter what form it shows itself in. So test all things and prove those things that are good is what God demands of each one of us. And so when we think about the subject of gambling, we have to understand that gambling isn't even called sin anymore in our culture. Rather, it's called gaming. You go to a casino for gaming and recreational activities. It's harmless recreation. I've talked to Christians who say that I see no difference in spending $10 or even $100 on a ball game than going to the casino, because after all, it's just entertainment. And they call themselves believers in God. There was a time when most religious people, let's correct that, most decent people, may not even be religious, but most decent people consider gambling to be wrong, a social evil. There are taxes attached to certain things like drinking and smoking and gambling, and they're called sin taxes, even by our secular social society. Because there was a time when decent, honorable people viewed these things as being morally wrong. And we as Christians ought to view them as being biblically sinful. Gambling's been around for a long time. It predates Christ. It predates even most of the writings that mankind even has. From the earliest beginnings, it seems man was gambling. Even in our own society, George Washington said, "Avoid gaming. This is a vice which is productive of every possible evil, equally injurious to the morals and health of its votaries. It is the child of avarice, the brother of iniquity, and the father of mischief. It has been the ruin of many worthy families, the loss of many a man's honor, and the cause of suicide." George Washington said that hundreds of years ago. Has things changed? Society has grown more acceptable of gambling. So has gambling become better? Does it no longer produce these things anymore then? Because after all, now it's acceptable. It's all right. And there's not a verse that says it's wrong, and everybody looks at it. I mean, 85% of the country engages in it. So obviously it's okay, right? Thomas Jefferson said, "Gaming corrupts our disposition and teaches us a habit of hostility against all mankind." Some strong language from those who talk about gaming and gambling. So let's begin by talking about, so what is gambling? One of the things that Sean and I take what we do very seriously. Very seriously. We talk several days a week for several hours a day as we prepare our lessons and talk about what we're going to present. We do take what we do very, very seriously. And as we go about preparing our lessons and we talk about some of these subjects like these basics, we bounce a lot of different ideas off of each other, play devil's advocate, if you will, with one another. And what are some of the arguments that are going to be brought up? The reason being is because we do want to, with all honesty, present to you what we believe is the truth concerning the Scriptures. We may not hit all those arguments, and if there is one that you know of that we don't, please let us know, because we do want to address it. But we, with the utmost sincerity of heart, believe that these are things that are destroying people's lives and costing brethren their souls. So when we talk about a subject like this, we have to be very clear about what we're talking about. What is gambling? If you were to ask that subject, I had some conversations with some people the past few days about this subject, about the term gambling. What does it mean? It's not, we have to establish this also, it's not merely chance. You remember Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 11, where it tells us that time and chance happen to them all? Some people say, that, you know, and we were talking this afternoon, that some people say that getting in your car is a gamble. Driving on 75 in rush hour is a gamble. Getting on an airplane is a gamble. What about investing money into the stock market or investing money into a company? Isn't that a gamble? Aren't you taking a chance? Aren't you taking a risk when you do those things? What about if you buy life insurance? Aren't you gambling against whether or not you're going to live or die when you do those things, or medical insurance? Isn't that the same as gambling? No, it's not. The reason being is this, and this is where we have to come to a good understanding of what the Scriptures teach. Time and chance happen to them all. In other words, time, none of us are not, there is no one here that is not affected by time. We are all going to one day run out of time. And there's only so much time that we have. And no matter what plans that we make, time can run out on us. That's time. Chance means circumstances of life may sometimes prevent us from being able to accomplish what our goals are, or what our tasks are, or what it is that we are setting our heart to do. Chance happens to everyone. These things have been put into effect by God Himself. They do not have any type of bearing on me wagering or gambling anything. It's just a matter of how life itself goes about. He's not saying that when a farmer goes out there to plant his crops that he is gambling, even though he is chancing things. Just because something is chance does not mean that it is gambling. Investing in a business or investing in stocks, that involves no sort of taking from someone's loss and taking advantage of them without providing some type of good or service. Getting on an airplane, yes, time and chance is a factor that's involved there, but we are not gambling when we do such things as that. And we need to understand that and understand why that is, that gambling is not there. To say that a Christian who gets into his car and drives to the church building to sit in this pew and to worship his God is no different than the person who goes to Choctaw Casino and sits at the roulette table is sadly mistaken. To be very, very nice about it. Because you know that I could be very blunt about that and just tell you outright, the person is a liar who is clouding the issue. It is not the same thing. And to do so is to cloud what really is at the heart of the problem. Gambling is a lot different than just time and chance. Time and chance happens to all. Everything we do involves time and chance. Much like if you think about a football game, and the people go out there into the football field and the two teams come up and they toss a coin in the air to determine who gets the ball first. That's chance involved, but there is no gambling that is involved there. To take that coin and then bet it on who's going to win the game, that's gambling. You see the difference? A simple coin toss that involves chance, the Scriptures even have those who would cast lots in order to make a determination about something. That type of thing is not gambling. Betting those things on the outcome of that event, that's what gambling is. And so when we are talking about gambling, what we're talking about is creating an unnecessary or unreasonable risk. Whenever we go out on 75, when we get into our car, when we get into an airplane, we are in a risky situation in a lot of ways, but it is not an unnecessary and unreasonable one. And it's also something that's not entirely beyond our control that's there. When we talk about gambling, we're talking about something that's entirely chance and outside the gambler's control. A wager is then placed upon that chance. The turning of the card, the rolling of the dice, the falling of the chips, whatever it may be. That's what gambling is a wager is placed upon that thing. The way in which I win then is by taking from you, because you put money on that and I put money on that. It just so happened that my number came up and yours didn't. So I take your money. I give you nothing in return. And that's supposed to be fun for you? That's supposed to be fun for you? Turning over your paycheck to me on the roll of the dice and then say, wow, that was fun. I've taught the Christians, say, give me $20 to guess how many fingers are behind my back. Boy, this is fun, isn't it? If it's fun, if it's just entertainment, then take away the money and have them sit there and watch those pretty things roll on the slot machine. Because that's all they're doing, right? It's just pretty. It's just fun playing the cards, right? We understand that the money adds an air of excitement about it that can be appetizing, can be a lot of fun. It is exhilarating. That's why sin is a passing pleasure. Because as soon as you lose your money, it's not as fun anymore. Gambling, then, is the act of risking what is yours in order to get that which belongs to another when nothing is given in return. That's a very simple definition. So as we go through the subject of gambling, that's what we're using as the definition of it. Here's some examples. What we're talking about is like betting on the outcome of sporting events, or betting on the fall of cards, or betting on the alignment of the slots, betting on the roll of the dice, betting on the numbers selected in the lottery. And it doesn't matter. And there's a whole host of other things that could be added there. And it's whether by deception or skill or luck. In other words, maybe I'm playing some kind of game where it's a hustle. And I know something about this that you don't. Well, not only am I using deception, but I'm wagering, I'm gambling, and I'm taking something from you, providing nothing in return. It may be that that's skillful. There are those who are professional gamblers that go about making their living by gambling on the tours. You can watch them on television and watch guys play poker for money, large sums of money. It doesn't matter how skillful they are, they're still gambling and they're still wrong. Besides that, it's not an honorable trade, as we'll look at a little bit later. It doesn't matter if it's by luck either. It doesn't mean that God has smiled upon you somehow by those types of things. And so let's look at Isaiah 65. It's an interesting verse in Isaiah 65 that I want to share with you. Isaiah 65 and verse 11. Isaiah 65 verse 11. But you are those who forsake the Lord, who forget my holy mountain, who prepare a table for Gad. G-A-D, Gad. If you may have a footnote in your Bible about what the word Gad means. It was a deity. It was the deity of fortune. The deity of good luck. We might call it today, Lady Luck smiled upon me. And so they had set aside the table of the Lord to serve the God of good fortune, or the God of good luck. They had also hedged themselves by the next, who prepare a table for Gad, who furnish a drink offering for many. Many is the deity of numbers, or the deity of fate, if you will. It is the deity, basically, of bad luck. And so what they had done is they had forsaken God and hedged themselves between these two deities, one to help them give good luck and one to protect them against bad luck. Sounds like gambling to me. And it sounds like what a lot of people are doing. They get up there and they roll the dice and they blow on the dice, and daddy needs a new pair of shoes, and they throw it down there and they're just praying for good luck. And keep the bad luck away from me. And people will wear certain clothes and do certain things and roll the dice a certain way and do all these kinds of things to bring them luck so that Lady Luck will shine upon them. It's no different than what they were doing back then. And so when we're talking about these types of things, you cannot trust in God and mammon. If you're trusting in the God of good luck or sacrificing to the God of bad luck, that's what's usually happening in gambling. And so let's ask, is it sinful? Well, let's ask this. Is it driven by covetousness? Is gambling driven by covetousness? Colossians 3 and verse 5 tells us, therefore put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. There is no verse, like as I told you before, that says thou shalt not gamble, but there are verses that tell us that covetousness is to be put away from us. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 10 tells us that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. What form does that show itself in many times? Obviously, it shows itself in the person who spends all of his hours at work and forsakes his family. Obviously, the love of money has pierced him through with many sorrows. It also shows it in the form many times of gambling, because there are people who go there, and that's the reason that they go. Initially, that's why many people do go. It's the idea of getting rich quick, of getting something without really risking too much. It's the idea that this will be the answer to all of my problems. And wouldn't it be great to fantasize and to think about the idea of having all this money? Gambling is fed by the sin of covetousness. That's why we have all the billboards that tell us how much the latest Powerball is currently at. People are even planning their retirement by hoping to win the lottery. There are those who wager their entire paychecks. But it's just because they want to give their money away, right? It's just because it's a lot of fun to not have food to put on your kid's table because you've gambled it all away, right? And obviously after they give their paycheck away to the person on the other side of the table, they say, wow, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? Take away the money and just watch the little symbols rolling around. Would any of us really pay that much money just to watch that? But we're supposed to believe that we're gambling, it is. Luke 12 and verse 15 says, to take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. In Proverbs 15 and verse 27, it says that he who is greedy for gain troubles his own house. And you see that all the time, that those who are going about gambling and engaging in these covetous practices are the ones who are troubling their own house by not being able to provide for the things that their family most needs. Will Rogers once said that the best way, the easiest way to double your money is to fold it in half and stick it in your pocket. And that is very true. If you want to double your money, that's what you do. Fold it in half, stick it in your pocket, and use it wisely. And don't gamble it away. Some people say, well, it's consensual, though. The person who's on the other side of the table, who's wagering his money, he did it by consent. And so how could it be stealing? Let me ask you this. Remember years ago, well, not in our lifetimes, but you remember that even in our country, people used to duel. You know, where they would take the pistols and they'd stand across from each other. They'd count to a number. They'd pull their pistols out and shoot each other. Well, neither one of them wanted to die, right? But they did want to kill the other person. But both of them were there by consent. So it's not murder then, since it was consensual, right? That's why it was outlawed and made illegal. That would be murder by consent. But it's still murder. It does not matter to God whether that other person gave you the opportunity or even wanted you to steal their money or not. You stole it. And that's what it is. It's not just taking it or winning it. It is stealing it. Because you did nothing to earn it, and you gave nothing in exchange for it. That person did not want to give you their money, no more than you wanted to give them your money. You sat down at the table because you wanted to win. Period. Period. There was excitement attached to it, because there was a risk of losing it. You knew the risk. They knew the risk. But it still does not mean that you did not steal their money. Because you did. That's the biblical definition of it. It's not the worldly one, but it is the biblical one of what stealing is all about. He takes what you didn't want to, you take what he did not even want to give up. What about stewardship? We're called upon by God to be good stewards. But there are a lot of people, even those who go to casinos, I've got a lot of family members that have said this, easy come, easy go. You ever heard that? Easy come, easy go. That's an example of a person who has a very poor attitude about stewardship. It's not easy come, easy go. God calls upon us to be good stewards of our money. Good stewards over all that has been entrusted to us, including our money. The person who says, well, it's just a dollar, is a person who has a very poor attitude toward stewardship. Luke 16 tells us that he who is faithful in what is least will also be faithful in what is most. If you're unfaithful in what is least, you'll also be unfaithful in what is most. If it's just a dollar to you, you'll do it with 10, 20, 50, 100, 1,000. You'll do it with your entire family, because that's how it gets started. That's where it begins. We can't have that attitude toward our stewardship. In Psalm 50, in verse 10, Here David tells us, "For every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle on a thousand hills. I know all the birds of the mountains, and the wild beasts of the fields are mine. If I were hungry," God says, "I would not tell you, for the world is mine, and all its fullness. Everything of this world belongs to God. He is the owner of everything, and He has only entrusted us with these things." So let's say this. Let's say that you're going to go out of town, and you say, "Eddie, I want you to watch my car for me while I'm out of town." And so you hand me those car keys and say, "You know, just watch my car while I'm out of town." I look at your car and say, "You know what? I don't like the color of your car. I'd rather it be green." And so I go out and I paint it green. And I'd like to get some of those things that go on the back of the seat that kind of massage your back when you sit in it. And so I get all these. I take out your leather seats and I put those beads in there instead. And plus, you know, I don't want to mess my vehicle up by hauling some animals around in it. So I'm going to use your vehicle to haul some animals around. And we got to put some hay down because, you know, they like hay when they're eating. And you come back and you say, "Where's my vehicle?" "Well, here it is. I gave you your vehicle back. What's the problem? I wasn't a very good steward, was I? Wasn't a very good steward. I give you $100 and I tell you, hey, protect this money for me for a while. Sure thing." And you head to Choctaw. You're not a good steward over that money. God gave you those things. And you go out gambling and risking those things unnecessarily to take from another person and not provide anything in return. You are not a good steward of that money. 1 Corinthians 6 tells us in verses 19 and 20 that we were bought at a price. We don't belong to ourselves. If God owns our bodies, owns our souls, owns our spirits to where we are not able to just do anything that we wish, how much more so with the things that He has provided also for us? We can't even decide that with our bodies. And we have to be careful about the decisions that we make with our bodies. We have this attitude and this idea, and this is one of the problems that we have identifying sinful things. We think we can just do anything that we want to with our bodies. As if you own it. As if you own it. And you don't. I don't own it. And I can't just do anything I want with it. And when I think I can, I've lied against the God of heaven in the process. Gambling involves a failure of poor stewardship. What about the command to love your neighbor? We talked about this briefly. In Luke 10 and verse 27, we're told that we are to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. In Matthew 7 and verse 12, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. That word that's used for love in Luke 10 and verse 27 is agape. Agape is a giving type of love. It is not a taking kind of love. God gave His only begotten Son. That is agape love. It is doing what is best for that person. So you taking that person's paycheck over a roll of the dice, you're doing that because you want him to do the same to you? Is that what's in the best interest of the other person? How does hatred for our neighbor show itself? Gambling is one way. Because it fails to provide for him what is needed to even take care of his own family. Gambling fuels things like greed, lust, but it never fuels love. Ever. What about the scriptural idea of work ethic? Ephesians 4 verse 28 tells us this. Ephesians 4 verse 28 says, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need." The Bible never condones the idea of something for nothing. Ever. Ever. There was an occasion where David wanted to sacrifice to God, and this guy said to him, "Well, I will just give you this field so you can sacrifice it to your God." And David said, "I will not sacrifice to my God that which costs me nothing." We have a very poor attitude in this country about what we think is deserved and what we're entitled to. You are not entitled to something for nothing. Our country engaging in giving people something for nothing is a sinful activity. And it is one that is destroying our country and it's destroying people. Gambling is a promise of the same thing. You can take care of yourself for the rest of your life. You'll be rich if you just play that money down and the right numbers come up, and you'll have nothing else to worry about. It destroys people's work ethic and teaches them that they can indeed have that opportunity. The scriptures say in Romans 12 and verse 17 that we are to have regard for things that are honorable in the sight of all men. I repeat again. We are to have regard for things that are honorable in the sight of all men. In case you missed that, we are to be and have regard for things that are honorable in the sight of all men, not just when you get in front of your own mirror. And not when you talk to your closest friends. And not when you turn on the television and see if you're in agreement with them. We are Christians and are called by a higher standard. It is not an honorable way of making a living. It is not a work ethic. God-given principles for obtaining material goods in Ephesians 4 and verse 28 was one of them, that we work laboring with our own hands what is good that we may provide for others. It says in Proverbs 12 and verse 11, I would invite you to turn there because it's a very interesting verse. Proverbs 12 and verse 11. Proverbs 12 and verse 11. This verse says that he who tills his land will be satisfied with bread, but he who follows frivolity, some versions say chases fantasies, is devoid of understanding or is a fool. Again, the one who tills his land will be satisfied with bread, but he who chases fantasies is a fool. That's what gambling is. You're chasing a fantasy. Very dark one. But it is a fantasy. It is one to think about that sure would be nice. We are to labor with our own hands. We can exchange goods by buying and selling. James 4 talks about going to a place in a particular season and engaging in commerce, buying and selling of things. We can exchange goods in that way. This includes things like investments and things such as that. Through giving and receiving. In other words, voluntary gifts to those who are in need. Gambling, however, is a parasite on legitimate economy. And it exists simply without any type of divine sanction or approval when it comes to scriptural work ethic. Also, this is something that really struck me, as it's highly addictive. I understood gambling to be an addictive thing. And on many of the signs where it advertises gambling and casinos and things like that, it even says, problem gambling? Call this number. There are Gamblers Anonymous, just like there's Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and things such as that. But it is highly addictive, even more so than I first realized as I was going through this lesson. It's not a chemical dependency in that there's chemicals that are involved in the drugs and things like that, but it's more of a psychological dependency. And it's one that is even worse in many ways. It has been put on par with things like heroin and cocaine and even worse. I want to notice just a few statistics. The annual global revenue from gambling is about $125 billion a year. And is expected to increase by 8.8% each year. It was hard to find statistics that were accurate because it's changing so quickly, so rapidly. You can't keep up with it. These are actually 1997 numbers. The United States, the world's largest gambling market, accounted for more than $74.5 billion. That's with a B, annually. In 1963, lotteries were banned in every state. Now, 37-plus states, including D.C., have lotteries. Lotteries are the most played form of legalized gambling in the United States. Back in 1978, only Nevada had things like casinos. Now more than 25 states have casinos. 50 million people engage in it all the time. Approximately 100 million people in America placed bets in 2013. There's more money that is spent on gambling than on education, religion, and medical care combined. There's more money spent on gambling than is spent on movies, videos, DVDs, music, and books combined. More is spent on casinos than amusement parks and movies combined. There are three times more Americans who will visit casinos than baseball games. States already raise about $20 billion annually. It's more than 4% of the total revenue of our country from lotteries and casinos. And it's legal in 46 states now. There's only four where it's not legal. And I believe it's probably a very loose definition of legal and illegal. The four were Hawaii, Tennessee, Utah, and Vermont. And I'm sure that they have it in some shape, form, or fashion, even if it's not legalized. As much as 15.4 million or 15.4 million Americans are believed to be problem or pathological gamblers. Approximately 1 in 5 pathological gamblers attempt suicide. That number was shocking to me because it is 200% higher than any other addiction or the national average. 1 in 5 addicted gamblers will attempt suicide. The ones that have spouses, they're 150% more likely to commit suicide than the national average, the spouses. When it comes to drugs and alcohol, the body can only take so much before it drops dead. It can only take so much. With gambling, it's not that way. Because you can keep on betting, keep on betting, keep on betting. The average debt of those who are engaged in gambling is between $55,000 and $90,000. 90% of problem gamblers use their credit cards to pay for their gambling. 1 in 10 who start gambling are going to become addicted to it. The love of money turns into a love of the action. There was actually a lady that was talking about her gambling addiction, and she said that she hated it when she would win on the slot machine because it took so long for the money to come out of the bottom of the machine that it was delaying her ability to put the next coin in the machine. The love of money is superseded by the love of the action. And that's why that psychological addiction that is there. And that's why it is so prevalent. 2 Peter 2:14 says, having eyes full of adultery and that cannot cease from sin. That sounds like this. Proverbs 6, verses 27 and 28. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? We're told in Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 10, he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. Only 8% of addictive gamblers escape the clutches of their addiction over their lifetime. Only 8%. It's higher than any other addiction. I didn't realize that. Gambling, because of money. Lastly, one of the reasons that I think we need to think about is it's destructive as well. How many have been killed or killed others because of gambling? When I was a child, as I told you, I was living in my grandparents' house. A friend of ours' brother was shooting pool for money with another man, and they got into an argument about the game. That guy who had been in prison had been released, left and went out to his vehicle, grabbed a shotgun, walked back into the house, and shot him dead. Over 25 cents. Over 25 cents. It's not a unique story. But I hope it's one that makes you think. How many homes have been destroyed? How many kids have went hungry and without because daddy went out to the dog track or the horse track chasing a fantasy for fun? How many marriages have been destroyed? How many crimes have been committed? In every community that has legalized gambling, the crime rate immediately jumps up 84% immediately. Most of them jump up well over 100% in those communities. Poverty runs rampant. And you can look at these casinos that are so very, very glamorous, beautiful, shining city on a hill, and just look within a few blocks of that casino at what it's done to the community and the poverty that's there. It plagues upon the uneducated. Research shows that the real cost is this. For every dollar that is obtained through gambling and through lotteries, it costs me and you as taxpayers $3. So the governments who are telling us that with these lotteries we can pay for things like roads and schools and lunches and health care and all these types of things for every dollar they bring in through that, it costs me and you $3. There is so much gambling debt in this country that if it were divided up equally among all of us, every man, woman, and child in this country would have to pay $130 a month for it. Sounds like a lot of fun, right? It is very destructive. And as we said, the suicide rate is so much higher than the national average, it's ridiculous. In Proverbs 15 and verse 16, it says, "Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasures with trouble." And I believe that if we engage in gambling, we are doing nothing but inviting trouble upon ourselves. And it has troubled our nation as well. And so when I think about gambling, I'd have to say this: yes, it's sinful. And there is no verse that says that gambling, thou shalt not gamble. But I believe with all my heart that gambling is sinful. And it doesn't matter what size the wager is, whether it's a quarter or a quarter of a million. It doesn't matter what the size of the wager is. I also believe it doesn't matter what the cause of it is, whether you're trying to support a school, a government, or just for fun, or whatever it is that you're wanting to engage in gambling. If you're engaging in gambling, brethren, if you're engaging in gambling, you're engaging in a sinful activity. And it's not right for a Christian to engage in it. It also doesn't matter what good may be done with the winnings. I've had Christians tell me that, yes, but if I did win the lottery, I'd give 10% to the church. I haven't asked Ron and Charlie if that's a deal they would take or not, but I dare say I don't think they will. I went to a gas station one time that I filled up with gas, and when I went in to pay for it, they wanted to give me a lottery ticket. And there was a slip moment where I was like, can I take this? One thing crossed my mind: what if I won? Even if it was okay for me to take it, which I don't think it was, but even if it was, what if I won? I'd be so rich I didn't have to care what you think, right? But you understand. It doesn't matter what good I'd want to do with it or say I would do with it. It doesn't matter if it pays for some kid's lunch. It's still wrong, and I'm not to be engaging in it. So I do believe that these things are sinful for these reasons that we listed. It may be a lawful evil, but brethren, it's evil. There's nothing good that's attached to it. My question is, can you recognize that sin? Can you recognize this as being a form of evil that we are to stay away from? If not, I think we need to have a conversation, and we need to talk very gently and lovingly. But I do believe we need to talk. Gambling is something that will destroy the Lord's people. It is something that the Scriptures do not advocate in any shape, form, or fashion. And it's something that would destroy your reputation. It would destroy your influence. It's something that would destroy your life. I hope this has been beneficial to you. If there's some question that you have that I didn't answer tonight, please let us know. I want to answer questions that we may have about these things. But for tonight, if you're not a Christian, you're called upon to be holy people, and you can be a Christian tonight. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and He came to this earth to die for your sins, if you're willing to confess Him before men and be immersed in the waters of baptism, if you've been sinning, if you've been engaging in things that you shouldn't, and it's time to turn around, you understand that now, yes, you do see that these things have been sinful, and you've been excusing them, let's come back to God, let's make things right, let's start fresh, and let's start tonight. Stop putting it off. Let's make things right with our God. We want to pray for you. We want to help you in every way that we can. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, please come as together we stand and sing this song.